Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Welcome to the next episode of Crypto Nights, where the best minds bridge the crypto divide. I'm your host, Kant Miryala, and here is my usual disclaimer. These are for educational purposes only. Yeah, we are talking to founders of ICOs, and they have some exciting stuff going on, but we are not gods. We have no idea which of these will make you money, which of them will not. So this is not a solicitation, nor an endorsement for investment. You do so at your sole discretion. I highly recommend you do your own due diligence, because we are not financial advisors and tokens can be highly risky. You could literally lose all the investment that you make. Okay. With that, having said that, let's move on to the more exciting stuff. Mike D. Schaeser, CEO of Proofsuite. I am telling you, this was one of the most exciting. And as you can imagine, Mike is supremely busy running a company, being a technologist, product manager, and all of that for Proofsuite. Here is a brief intro to him. The world of assets and contracts are in the beginning stage of transformation, and they have ushered in a major innovation in blockchain technologies, or via blockchain technologies. Mike is a lead product designer and developer of Proofsuite of blockchain products. And I also liked in particular that I had a chance to look in YouTube and play Mike D. Schaeser's. There was a YouTube video that Mike created himself on how to quickly launch. You can literally launch your own ICO website within minutes from what he has explained there. Over his professional career, he has independently built over 30 apps serving 2.5 million users. So Mike is no stranger to technology and startups and so on and so forth. Proof is a decentralized blockchain-powered marketplace transforming tokenizing traditional investments. It has raised already $1.7 million in the token presale. And they're very excited, because the reason I'm excited about the timing of this call, and we're going to be doing one more call with Proof, because the diversity and the, you know, the breadth of their offering is huge. Okay. So, and the most exciting thing is, yeah, they have completed a pre-token sale, but they got investment from Token as a Service, TAS, which has contributed $260,000. And Proof is also going to be launching their public token sale, and that commences on November 1st, couple of days, 2 days from now. So very, very exciting stuff. And that's the reason for the timing here. Without further ado, here is Mike D. Schaeser of Proofsuite.
Hi, Mike. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Very, very excited, Mike. Thank you. I know you're super busy. You're just literally 24 hours away from your token sale launching. So I really appreciate you finding the time to talk to us. And I have a few questions actually here. I wanted to start off, I wanted to jump right in if you don't mind.
Sure, let's go.
So the first set of questions are around your partnership with Blip, Brooklyn Law Incubator and Policy. Quite frankly, I don't even know what Blip is. So can we start there?
So Blip works to create innovation around obviously legal areas and policy in the United States. And we are working together to help craft legislation that might be beneficial to American citizens, specifically by working to clarify and laws around blockchain, but also to create a bed of innovation in the United States by leveraging blockchain technology. We've developed quite a few methods and ideas for getting that accomplished.
So can you give us an example of what that means?
Sure. So right now, one of the things that we're doing is we're kind of scouting out and looking for and talking to people who are running for office, and specifically trying to change the model of how politicians make raise funds. Because right now, politicians must go to corporations. And so that is the swamp that they're drinking out of. And that means that their interests are to protect bankers. That's who, you know, that these are or the wealthy. And so we think that blockchain technology can be used to create essentially token sales for politicians, for politicians, and that people can vote, and then that these politicians, in order to advance blockchain technology, would be leveraging a mobile application that people who own tokens or just the constituents could vote on for all the policy decisions. So every time there's a senator or state representative or local representative makes votes on behalf of something, they're sharing the information with their, and they're leveraging blockchain technology to record the votes. And they're saying that I'm going to vote as my community. So the politician essentially turns into a surrogate of the community that they represent. And they're raising funds, not from just the big corporations, but from their from people around the world in the blockchain community. And also with the idea that they're going to work on legislation that will advance blockchain technology adoption. And we think that when a few politicians get into office, this will send a message to the rest of, the rest of the government, letting them know essentially that, one, that we're actually potentially about to see real democracy in a sense that people are representatives actually be surrogates of the people, and other politicians who are competing with these other guys will be able to see an option. They don't have to sell out to corporations or these other wealthy interests. They can get funding from this other area, but the one catch is they have to learn about blockchain technology. Obviously, they have to look into how it can innovate, and they can totally tap into all the liquidity that's in the blockchain market. But they obviously have to create a platform. And so this will actually get politicians talking and working and actually give them an incentive. Because right now the biggest problem is they don't have the time or care about creating a vision for how blockchain technology can empower communities. Because like we talked about last time, you can tokenize anything. You can give people the ability to do many things. But right now there's a lot of, regulation that kind of prevent people from being able to do that in the United States. And so we're going to work to, once we get politicians who can pass legislation on behalf of people, and then also kind of have more people kind of starting to being forced to, essentially serve as a surrogate of their community, which is funny. Like we always talk about, it's funny you're talking about doing this in America, right? Like we're talking about like an innovation that just allows people to actually get, to have a democracy that doesn't, it's not just completely driven by corporate interests. So that's essentially what we're working to do, is create a new funding source, because that's and that's specifically built around blockchain policy, and then using blockchain technology to actually empower communities directly from the people. And that's kind of what we're working on.
Great. Let me move on to my next question then. What do you see as two or three major challenges with law as related to cryptocurrency?
So I think the biggest thing is that the interests of the banks, when it comes to cryptocurrency, it's obviously frowned upon. Banks, they want you to keep your money with them. They want you to go through their exchanges. They want you to, the financial service industry, that stuff, that. And they are the ones who essentially put most of the politicians in power. You could say, oh, no, the votes do it. But, there's a correlation between how much people raise and how many votes they get. And it's a very close correlation. And so people who actually have ideals for the community, they can do that. So the problem with the law is that the lawmakers are not trying to serve people's best interests, and blockchain doesn't have a place for them to really champion. Like if you go to talk to senators or anyone or all these different people, there's no interest. Why would I push this forward? What does this do for this? Doesn't serve my
interest.
The interest that I have here. So we want to change that. That's what the problem with the policy is right now.
So in some sense, they're at loggerheads, cryptocurrency and the existing players, because they're entrenched players and they have an influence. They're the ones that are helping politicians raise money. And then
I think it's not as much of a conspiracy around them trying to stop blockchain as it is that the politicians have no interest in doing something that obviously could cause some disruption to the interests that they serve. So I think it's more of that. It's like, why would I, okay, so who am I, what am I really winning over? There's no point in to go through all of that. So we want to kind of change the incentive structure in politics right now.
And you might have answered my next question, which is, how is this stopping or slowing cryptocurrency and blockchain from being adopted more widely?
Once you have the right policy in place. Yeah, once there's the right policy in place, we think the adoption will be widespread, because a lot of people are really kind of afraid of using cryptocurrencies, blockchain. They think of Bitcoin, Silk Road, and drugs and things like that. And when we have policies that actually come out and people start realizing, hey, you can buy a piece of these things and you can tokenize your community and raise funding here and there from around the world or whatnot, that's really gonna, I think, gonna change things. But right now, even with our token sale, if you go through our portal, you know, we're required, you know, to prevent, you know, legal risk, to make people check a box that says I'm not a resident of the United States of America. You know, a lot of token sales do that. So that's
the, yeah. And people conveniently ignore or just say I'm not, and then continue to invest in that. So it's
pure. It doesn't prevent a lot of people from knowing about it or publicizing it in America. Like, you can't really publicize these a lot of these token sales or different things. A lot of them are fraudulent, but there will be, and there are some really good projects out there.
Okay, so how is this going to affect people like you and me who are heavily involved in cryptocurrencies?
Regarding legal, yeah, I mean, I think if we can get some friendly laws, I mean, it's just going to, you know, innovation blossoms where there are friendly laws for that innovation. That's why we're seeing a lot of innovation in Switzerland and other areas like that.
Do you see that happening?
Crypto Valley, yeah, there's a bit of a lot happening there. There's a lot of, and it's because it's a stable government, but also the regulator, I had a guy come in yesterday from Switzerland that we were talking about. He's just set up a hedge fund for cryptocurrencies. And one of the big parts that he was discussing with us was the fact that Switzerland is awesome just because the regulators that can't be visited them. But it was to help them. It was to say, that's the environment there. Is there anything we can do to help make things less hard for you to innovate? There's not that attitude in the United States of America, but that would be great. I recently met with a former Senate Majority Leader, George Mitchell, in Hong Kong. And one of the big areas we talked about, a lot of politicians say this, but one thing he talked about, he said, well, the politicians and the senators and the representatives should be going to the people and the industries contacting the blockchain companies, not the other way around. And then they should, just like I just mentioned, like they do in Switzerland, or have done, or in some cases, but that should be happening in the United States. But you have to change the incentive structure for the politicians.
Do you see that if Switzerland is in some sense like a proof of concept or a prototype and it succeeds, then there'll be a secondary impact on countries like US? How do you see Swiss?
Well, Switzerland, you know, they had the anonymous bank accounts. Yeah. Up to a few years ago, that was gone. Switzerland is a financial services country. Yeah. So this Capital is their next the thing. Yeah. The next thing, what we've heard is that this is the next thing. Cryptocurrencies is where they want to focus. That's they want to be friendly there. They want to innovate there because they don't have numbered accounts anymore. And there's a new innovation called cryptocurrencies that's going to change finance. And so Switzerland is very focused on being on the cutting edge of that and works very closely to help companies innovate and grow in that area.
So what is Proof's role going to be in this whole, you know, impacting or helping Blip? Well, what exactly is Proof's role in that?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a lot of experience working in developing blockchain technology. And so we're on the technical side of, you know, what's feasible, how much can we scale this, what are some real world solutions that can be built out, and we also work with and share some of our ideas, and Blip mostly works on the policy side with the legal realities, the political realities of the situation, working on political strategy and determining how we can craft something that can actually be effective.
I see. So is it fair to say that they are kind of, Blip is kind of in charge of writing the policies and best practices and so on and so forth, and Proof is kind of going to implement them in a blockchain?
Well, right now it's mostly developing concepts. I think one of the biggest areas that we're focused on right now is identifying young potential candidates to serve on more municipal levels and potentially starting to do some of the first crowd sales for politicians who are going to be leveraging blockchain while in office to serve their constituents. And having their interests not served by large, you know, banks, et cetera, and providing a different, and sending a signal. I think right now sending a signal to government officials to see, hey, there's a new way. Because a lot of great talent that's out there that could be helping with policy, they don't go out there because they don't want to have to go raise money from, you know, the institutions. They serve the people, or they want to, they would rather serve the people and actually create benefits. But as we know in the United States, that's more of a pipe dream right now. And blockchain has the opportunity to absolutely transform that.
So that would be, for example, a smart contract that prevents a single institution from, so there'll be a limit on how much each contributor can contribute, so to speak. And therefore a larger number of contributors will be.
No, financial firms will still be able to participate. There doesn't have to be that. I mean, a candidate could make it that way, right? For example, and whitelist people. That's totally a possibility. If a politician wants to do that, that's up to them. So I think there's flexibility there in how they would do it. I think that one of the areas is that, yeah, you know, a lot of the large institutions, you know, when it comes to cryptocurrency and things like that, they catch on a little later. So I think in the first few years, we won't really even have that problem. I think it'll be really coming from the crowd. And if they want to participate, I think if they're participating in crowd sales, their head's already in the right place at this point, probably.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you prevent, once you have the blockchain for crowd sale for politicians to raise money, how do you prevent them defaulting to what was happening before, the same investors?
Yeah, so I think one of the areas that's really important for, I think, the candidates that would be supported in this kind of initiative would be ones that essentially allow their constituents to vote. Doesn't matter what the corporate interests say, it's basically on the blockchain, citizens, you know, of that community, they vote for what, and they could either do people who support it, the sale, but probably in a better way is to do it, like you said, because banks can fund the sale, is to do it so that actually one vote per person in the community, and they're literally voting as a surrogate of the community that they serve. Quite strictly, like I would vote this way, right? Like, I think this is better, this is why. People leave their votes, and then no matter what, even if their constituents say, go this way, they actually go in, they cast their vote on behalf. And that has a possibility to really change things.
Or a reversal. I'm just thinking aloud. This may or may not make sense. Or a reversal of the pre-token sale. The pre-token sale is for the smaller investors. You cannot not to exceed, $10 or something like that, or $1,000. And then out of the total fund that he wants to raise you after the pre-token sale is over, which is the crowd, so to speak, the remaining can be the banks or whoever else, the larger institutions can come in to kind of fill the gaps if anything is left.
There's a lot of potential. I mean, like I said, I think it'll come up to the politician. There's a million ways that you could do it. And that's the thing. That's what I think, you know, you're selling to the crowd and you're selling a lot to the blockchain community in the early days. And so the structure should be definitely you should definitely consult people who are investing in the blockchain space. And then what the blockchain space also gets is advocates of blockchain in general, who are actually introducing, that's the other part. So one is voting on policies for their particular community. The other one is creating policy, right? And championing policy, but specifically the candidates are running around empowering people by legalizing completely the use of cryptocurrencies, making it like so the SEC can't step in, let anyone create a token for anything, and basically say that a token is not a security, or it is, and it doesn't matter, and people in the community are immune from this, and that here's how it's going to work as far as in the community getting things verified, making a very streamlined process for verifying, you know, not as long, you know, capital, whatever, a very streamlined process so that people can literally within at least a day create a structure that works. And then startups begin to build, you know, technologies around this, creating jobs in the community, and then allow the community to broadcast different assets that they have. You know, one big one is muni bonds. So every town has all these municipal bonds. They usually have great yields, but they're only a small group of really big investors have access to this. But with the returns that they give, I mean, everyday people are keeping their money in, you know, you know, 1% savings accounts when you have these really great municipal bonds that are pretty secure, that are amazing. So the community can actually benefit from this stuff instead of just the banks, right? Why are the banks making 9-10% annually or 5% annually on debt that the city has? Why aren't the people making that and giving the funds to the city? And so that's just one example. And then you have infrastructure projects for the city that can be funded by the people. Right now, there's no way of really doing that right now, because you're talking about, you have to create a company and an entity, and then you have to make it public, or you have to this, and then people are nervous about it. But tokenization kind of can solve that, and it can engage the community more in helping secure and uplift itself. And that's really what the power of blockchain is, and that's what these candidates, we hope, would be focused on bringing. And this is the platform is, you know, everyone, you might believe in abortion, you might not believe in abortion, you might believe in, you know, same-sex marriage, you might not, and transgender policies, and you might have different views on that. You might have all these things, but at the end of the day, what politicians, I think, around the blockchain technology are focused on is community empowerment, specifically, around the community being able to invest in itself and get outside funding through blockchain technology. And the tokenization revolution, it's the financial renaissance, essentially, and bringing that about and changing and focusing more on uplifting a community by making investors in themselves and giving everyone an incentive to just improve daily life, because the value of things go up when situations improve. You know, when you have great school, like if you think about real estate or businesses, when it comes to attracting people to the town, small town, big town, security is one big thing. Sanitation is one big thing. Your school system and the quality of the education is a very big thing. The amount of talent that's there is a very big thing. And to do all of these things, getting the community together to work on those things is actually one thing that you don't really see a lot of politicians are focusing on. They just say big general words like jobs and, you know, and then one of those other ridiculous policies that have to do with people's private lives. We think, you know, community empowerment is something that's going to change when it comes to the interests, and as opposed to running on all these things and then going in the background and kind of, you know, focusing on how to, you know, benefit the donors.
Extremely exciting, tremendously disruptive. But in the interest of time, let me move on to a second equally exciting topic that we have, which is blockchain-based government. Mm. How viable is a blockchain-based government? Example, Dubai, Catalonia. Can you give us some ideas about the pros and cons, or why you think that's potentially possible?
Well, I think it's all in how you implement it. We've been in Dubai and we worked with some of the government officials we're working on there. They're really, you know, I can't say too much about what they're doing, but I will say that they're trying. And when it comes to Catalonia, you know, obviously they're losing their sovereignty, their sovereignty, and that's going to be that, you know, companies are leaving, et cetera. And I think, so these are two very different places, but I think the more innovation you have, the better. When I think of a blockchain based government, I think like I said, a lot about voting via blockchain technology, empowering community around blockchain technology. I think just passing nice laws, I think a blockchain enabled government is really good. For example, I'm in Korea, but occasionally I have to get documents verified by where a company is based in Estonia or in the US, and I have to get it apostilled, and that takes a very long time. Governments being able to apostille or people being able to notarize things on the blockchain is a much more effective way of doing a notary service and doing an apostle service. So I think if governments recognize blockchain technology, they could improve the speed of business in regards to verification of things when people are abroad or just in general. And then when it comes to crowdsourcing, you know, funding for different activities, I think that's really good, as opposed to, you know, the general tax idea. And even with taxes, the cool thing about blockchain technology, public ledger, is that people can actually see where their actual money went in the system, right? Your funds actually went to this division or that division. I think that will change things, as opposed to kind of just going into this black hole, which actually just goes to pay the Fed interest payments so they can borrow more money and then move all the money out. So like, it's really impossible to do it. for federal tax, federal taxes. But I think one of the, you know, on a state and a city level, I think it's really important that that a blockchain-based government lets you see that. The transparency is a huge one, but I think that'll really, you know, every time your money gets taken out of your check and income, imagine being able to see that five, like literally where your actual money went. Like they could say 10% goes to this, whatever, everyone's money, a piece of it goes to that, but it'd be even cooler to say, okay, well, your money actually went to go pay for a prison.
You know? So, I mean, going back to that old saying, right? Government of the people, by the people, for the people. That used to be a nice statement. We could never implement that. But of the people, I understand, by the people is something that you're really making, enabling. I mean, people, it looks like it's a much more participatory governing. It's like the person who's elected is almost like a symbolic representative. Yeah, I'm sure there are situations.
Isn't it funny that that's like innovative? Because that was supposed to be the idea, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's now turning out to be a mind-blowingly innovative thing. And there's actually opposition to that. That's even more hilarious. Anyway, so is proof actually building a set of tools or frameworks? So tomorrow, if Saudi Arabia or some other country wanted to come and say, okay, guys, we want to roll out a blockchain-based government, not to dilute the idea, but something similar to the way you said, hey, this is how you can put out your ICO sale and let me take the template and fill it out and roll it out. I'm sure it'll be much more complicated than that as we... is that something that you guys are building, a suite of tools, frameworks, ideas, templates?
Yes. So we're working on these areas. We're planning in the next year to open offices in New York, Singapore, and London. So we'll be in North America, Europe, and obviously here in Asia. The development team will remain here in Seoul. And the biggest area that those teams will be working on is actually focused on it's going to employ lawyers and business development professionals in all of these these new offices. And they'll be focused literally on working with government from a with institutions from a legal perspective, because you have to deal with legal, you have to deal with tax law, you have to deal with all the different other regulations. On top of that, like even if you want to do a loyalty point, for example, which we think is going to be huge on the blockchain, a lot of brands are going to do it, then you have to start dealing with the technical side. You have to figure out the integration side, how people are going to measure things, how you're going to do your accounting. So there's a lot when a big company, that's why we haven't really seen it much, because when a big company really attacks it, this is what they have to do. So we're going to open up a services arm, which essentially focuses on working hand in hand for custom solutions with bigger institutions to actually get their tokens onto the blockchain.
Yeah, that's quite crazy. So to me, this is all very exciting, but at the same time, I'm a little baffled because, Mike, I've been interviewing founders of ICOs, but your vision and the number of areas that you are addressing is so diverse that it's almost scary. So how do you plan to do that? You know, what do I mean by that? Well, you're raised almost a couple of million dollars. How much do you plan to raise in the actual token sale?
Well, we'll see. The amount that we raise, you know, half of it goes to crypto fiat, and that's going to be really, really important. You know, the more that's raised, the better, specifically for crypto fiat being something that we can put into a smart contract to act as a buffer in Ethereum. So that'll be really great. And the other side will just really determine the breadth at which and the speed at which, more so the breadth at which, we can get institutions onto blockchain and tradable in a decentralized fashion, which will be really, really phenomenal.
But more from a business angle, where do you see the revenues and profitability coming? What are the low-hanging fruit that you see in the next 12 months?
Well, the key is, so proof token holders earn from the marketplace activity and the in general, that's a very broad way of saying it. But if we go into specifics, we'll be here for hours probably. But essentially, the more market activity, the more crypto fiat that we're seeding, and the more insurance market activity that backs up all of the equities or securities or tokens, the more of that, the faster we go. That's our number one revenue stream. So we grow off the activity. And so building a lot of activities, we already will have a lot of really great, assets that are already out in the market today, cryptocurrencies. But when it comes to asset-backed, real-world things, properties, equities, bonds, all these other, derivatives, anything, just tokenized property, things like that, all that stuff, the quicker we can get companies on board and the bigger the projects and the bigger the valuations, the more we earn for ourselves and for our token holders. And when it comes to and then on the other side, we obviously, to do that, we have to actually get these businesses on. But there's a lot of demand for businesses to figure it out. And there's very low supply of people who actually have the tools, expertise to actually get them onboarded. And so on the other side, there will be, there'll be quite a bit of revenue there helping large institutions actually get on. But getting them on is just, there's a little bit of revenue being made there, a few hundred thousand dollars here, a few hundred thousand dollars there, which is great. But the multi-billion dollar and beyond model of what we're trying to do, for this to bring to the space, because we're also taking a drastic amount of the revenue that we generate and putting it into scalability, because we have to focus on solving it. So we're really focusing on the scalability of Ethereum itself that really has to be solved. The secrecy of transactions has to be solved on an open ledger, and we're getting closer. We're seeing solutions for that, but we want to play a big role there. But in regards to our revenue, it's from market activity, and then also from working with companies to bring them onto the market to generate more activity. But that the actual onboarding process itself generates revenue as well.
Great. Coming back to a couple of wrap-up type of questions, I have a question around setting up of what is known as community currency, pros and cons versus having a fiat currency, right? Or using an existing Bitcoin or Ethereum. Why would we need a community currency? Or do you even think we would need it?
So there's a really good example of that called Berkshires. It's a small, there's a small town in Massachusetts. Talk about this in one of my videos, but I really suggest everyone, if you go to YouTube, type in Berkshires. It's an amazing thing. There's a community.
How do you spell Berkshires?
B-E-R-K shares.
S-H-A-R-E.
And okay. It's a community currency that's used in a town, and it has 400 businesses in the small town use it. So pretty much all the companies in the town except Berkshires. Now, the way Berkshires work is that, and it's a very, the community loves it and has been doing it for so long, and I'll tell you why. You can go to the bank and you can buy Berkshires. If you have $100, you get 105 Berkshires, all right, from the bank. And then you can take that 105 Berkshires and you can use them as actual dollars everywhere in the community. Now, what does this do? Well, I can't take my Berkshires out to other places. I have to exchange it. And when I exchange it, right, then I would lose my $5. So this is why the community uses Berkshires. So that's a really good. Now, what if this was a cryptocurrency? And you had the same kind of exchange rate of the 5% to move it out. For community currency, cryptocurrencies, that's a really great model for keeping funds in the community. Because also with the right extensions, the companies are working on that. They could have online payments too for the community, right? So that would improve that. But that keeps the money circulating in the community and really grows it. And it's really great. And actually, there are a lot. A lot of small towns in the United States that are very that do very, very well. Usually if you look them up, they have community currencies. And we're talking about several dozen, widely used crypto or community currencies in the US. Most people haven't heard about them because they're usually in towns of like 50,000 people.
Wow. I had no idea that we even had such townships in US.
It is. Wow. Yeah. And that's community currencies is phenomenal, and that's even legal. But it's now just putting that on the blockchain is the key.
Well, now you have a better way of doing what they're already doing. I mean,
yeah.
And now these pockets of 4 or 5 towns that are, do we have any kind of a, you know, against a benchmark of the, or the average of the rest of the towns, are these with the community currency doing any better financially?
If you look, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert particularly in community currencies. And the thing is, I think there's been a lack of studies when you really look it up about these. But I think Berkshire's, I think a lot more of information is there. If you talk to people in the town, they, you know, if you look at, you know, the videos at least of the people.
They swear by it, huh?
Yes, that it's phenomenal. And if you really look at the model, it just makes sense, right? You go to the bank, you get them, you're saving 5% on everything. in the town.
Not to mention the community pride, right? I think there's some element of pride.
If we had it in Seoul, I would use that. It's plain and simple. I go to the bank and the bank's going to get, for every $100, they're going to give me 105. But I can only use it inside of Seoul. Yeah. Why not? Of course. But I think that's why, like in Seoul and mega cities, it's not as powerful. But you still have small pockets in megacities. You have communities. Every megacity is just a bunch of small kind of towns, right? And so they're just separated by a street. So that could be really good for uplifting particular communities, I think. I think that would be phenomenal.
Wow. Well, you've done a lot. So my last question here is, your experience in working with governments, you know, is there a way to accelerate? Because traditionally, these kinds of changes in governments take a lot of time, probably years, if not decades. Do you see some way of accelerating that? Is it by picking small pockets or, you know, examples of Dubai and Catalonia proving and then having some kind of a domino effect? How can we accelerate this? Because there's a lot of inertia in the system.
I think that to accelerate the adoption of blockchain, specifically around governments and other institutions, you need to have a few really great marquee products that start out. It's a fast follow game, I think, here. So really getting great companies to do loyalty points on the blockchain, getting governments to actually do, you know, like we talked about representatives having that are essentially act as surrogates of people. Doing these things on a bigger scale is really going to be the key. And I think when the initial ones happen, it's going to have that domino effect.
Got it. Well, I've kind of come to the end of the questions I had written down, but are there points I didn't bring up? Are there other interesting aspects of proof with respect to both government and law that you would like to share?
I mean, I think we touched on a lot of the things. I mean, one thing is that the Proof Blip partnership is, you know, something that we're excited about. I think more blockchain companies, like, even though it's not that's not our core business. And I think, you know, for Coinbase, you know, they have their business model. For these other token or these blockchain companies, they have their own models. But I think it's important for people in the blockchain community, and this is already starting to happen, to really work together around these areas. And we're looking to work with more companies that want to get friendly legislation passed, but not just, don't solve the symptoms, which is just this, the regulator and how they interpret stuff. Change the actual disease, which is how these laws are getting made and who's making them. And blockchain technology has a real power to do that. And I think that we want to work with more policymakers and more blockchain companies that are looking to do that and help out in any way we can.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to wish you the best, and thank you again for joining us. I'm sure this is not the last, the way you guys are going. I'll probably be following up with you on a periodic basis to give our audiences a more regular update, because this is exciting. One of the most disruptive companies I have seen. Congratulations, and I wish you all the best.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.